You're listening to the Bob and Bo Show. Here are your hosts, Ty Bob and Ty Bo. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I am Ty Bob. You can follow me at Ty underscore Bob underscore. We're joined by Ty Bo. Make sure to follow him in the show at Bob and Bo Show. And Sean is also joining us. You can follow him at Sheen1440. A little sad news. We are coming in on a Tuesday off of a Kansas City Chiefs loss. They lose to the Colts in Indianapolis 20-17 after some controversial calls, some bad playmaking decisions, and fights on the sideline. Before we dig into today's game, we'll hit you with a little upside.
Yeah, just want to lighten the mood, you know? And like everybody I've talked to this week, like, it's like, man, this week's been really long. Like, I feel like it's like, it should be Friday today already. It's Tuesday. But like, that's how much a Chiefs loss really affects the whole city. Chiefs lose. It's not a fun week. But top five, I'm coming at you with. Jeff asked for like jersey sales on Twitter, right?
At Jeffrey Vaughn.
He asked for like best-selling jerseys or something like that.
He did ask for the top five jersey sales of Chiefs players like all time.
I couldn't find that. I looked over. It just kept going to like who were the top jersey sales in the league for that year or whatever. It couldn't even give me like NFL history who's the top-selling jersey. So I couldn't find information. So I'm giving you my top five and some and a lot. my favorite jerseys, my favorite Chiefs jerseys that I want to have in my collection. At this time, I only have one of them that's on this list, and that I have a list much longer than this that of jerseys that I want to get. So let's just get into it. Let's get through this as quickly as I can because I have five honorable mentions.
Holy shit.
They were all so close to being in my top five. I had so many names swirling around in my head I could not really choose. So that's why I have this many mentions. First honorable mention on my list is Tony Richardson. Tony Richardson is one of the best pure fullbacks in the history of the game. Knowledge of the game was out of this world. He's also a super nice guy to meet in person. Tony Richardson was one of the last bastion fullbacks that, like, they were the reason that fullbacks still had a place on the depth chart. Some of the other guys that were playing in the league at that time, none of them are coming to mind, but like Tony Richardson was part of a group of fullbacks that were like the last of the greats. He will always be remembered as the guy that led the way for Priest Holmes to me. Every now and again, he'd catch a pass out of the backfield. But watching him play, if you watched the fullback position, like the dude was a monster. I loved watching him. So he made an honorable mention. Dante Hall, the X Factor, baby. The dude was electric. Like, it's not long, but he has one of the best highlight reels in the NFL, mostly because of the nasty juke he put on the Denver Broncos. Ripped off a long touchdown. In the end, he juked like three of them, but the two guys he made run into each other. I mean, it happened to the Broncos. Like, man, if you were in Arrowhead for a Dante Hall return, which I was. You're a lucky Chiefs fan because that's a part of our history that will never be forgotten. Another honorable mention, Jamal Charles. Now, Jamal Charles should be up there in this list for everybody who wants to buy or collect Chiefs jerseys because, you know, he's a running true deal. Like, even without really winning anything as a team when he played for us, like, his stats – speak for themselves. Like, of true running backs, he's got the best yards per carry in the history of the game, beating out some of the greats Jamal Charles, again, was one of those electric guys that, you know, if you were in Arrowhead watching him at the time, it's a lucky part of Chiefs history to be able to witness. Two left. I'm going to say, of the honorable mentions, Christian Okoye. Just to be able to say that you have a Nigerian Nightmares jersey would be cool, and definitely why I want him in the collection. Last on the honorable mention list is Lenny the Dawson.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. You know, just to be able to have that piece of Chiefs history, you know, our first Super Bowl back in the day, like, just, you know, he's even gone further from football into being a piece of Kansas City history as a local news reporter. So he definitely deserves to be on this list. And you know, it's a special jersey that you would be able to add to the collection. Like, I would love to have that hanging on the wall. So moving into my top five, and these are just my favorites. Like, I had a hard time selecting this. I really, really sat down and thought this, but these are my favorite jerseys that I want up in my collection. Number five, Hall of Famer Willie Rofe. 77, baby. Rofe the Loaf. I mean, this was a monster of a man. He was giant. It was funny talking to Bob Fesco over the offseason. He was like, you know, Willie could hardly walk. Like, he had like trouble standing up and sitting down. But when he was in game mode, he was like, boom! Like, you never seen a man that big move that fast. He loved to run block, but he was also exceptional as a pass blocker because you couldn't move him. I mean, he was cemented to the ground through those big tree trunks and legs. Great football to watch if you ever like focus on the left tackle position. Back in the early 2000s Chiefs film, like, it's just that what he was able to do was insane. Number four, Eric Berry. Means a lot to the city of Kansas City. The battle that he faced with cancer, everybody was behind him. Everybody was rooting for him. And just the level of play that he had here in Kansas City, both before and after his battle. I mean, to, you know, I didn't know what to expect when he was coming back but just to be one, shocked that someone could get back to that level of play, and be, and two, that, you know, this man was able to fully regenerating himself, like, get back healthy, get back to where he needed to be, and look like he didn't even miss a step. It was a beautiful story to have been a part of. And like, I, you know, that's like high school for me. Like, I'm maturing as a person as I'm watching this, and like, it was a cool thing to be a part of as a whole city. Number three, another Hall of Famer, Will Shields. I had the pleasure of personally meeting Will Shields when the Chiefs did training camp up in River Falls, Wisconsin. That same year, my parents got a football helmet that was signed by the whole team. But while I was up there, we were trying to get as many signatures as we could. Will Shields had headphones on and riding his bike. I don't know what was going on, but like, I flagged him down, and he's like, he asked me to wait, went into a building to do whatever he needed to do, and came back out and signed something for me, had a conversation with me. Like, he is one of the nicest guys in the world. And you wouldn't know it by the way he played, because he was bad motherfucker. Will Shields, 68, took on the meanest of the mean back in the day and made them look like little boys. On the same as Willie Rofe, and that 2002 to 2004 Chiefs offensive line, I'd put that up there with the Cowboys in the 90s. Like, that is one of the best offensive lines to ever play the game. And the reason why the next person on my list gained the yardage that he did Number two on my list is Priest Holmes. Priest Holmes, I've said this before on this podcast, is the reason I fell in love with Chiefs football. You know, like solely used him in Madden when I played Chiefs franchise back in the day. And like Priest Holmes would have like 2,500 yards. Like I would might have messed with the sliders a little bit, but like I was like five. So Priest Holmes was that dude. The way he would slide into the end zone off a long run, the way he would jump over the top at the goal line, he had it all. He had speed to the edge. He could cut without losing a step, like Priest Holmes. And don't forget stiff arm. Priest would put dudes in the ground sometimes. I mean, it wasn't like a Derrick Henry stiff arm, but like, dang, you weren't getting him. But that brings me to number one on my list. He's probably the best football player in our history. Anybody that watched football in the 90s, he was probably our most popular player ever. You know, Patrick Mahomes, but Derek Thomas. 58 is a common jersey to see at Arrowhead. A lot of people have his jersey, but it is he's earned. I mean, it is well deserved. He's one of the greats. I mean, to play the linebacker edge rusher position. Derek Thomas, you know, chance shot in his head a little bit. Like that's, you know, he's up there with the guys like Lawrence Taylor. Like if he had a full career, I mean, who knows where Derek Thomas would be in the history books. But that long-winded top five is my top five favorite jerseys and some.
A lot.
That's a good list. I can't disagree with any of those. Derek Thomas undoubtedly needs to be number one. Until Patrick Mahomes finishes his career, Derek Thomas needs to be number one in all categories. Now on to a little bit more somber news. As we said, the Chiefs did lose. But look, guys, there's upside. There's upside. We're going to talk about a lot of things that went wrong. We're going to talk about a lot of things that went right and how this will benefit us moving on into the rest of the season. I think first and foremost, it's most important to state that we've been in this same exact position before. The last time Kansas City lost their first game to the Colts, which shouldn't have been a loss to the Colts, because they were still a bad team. They had a bad quarterback in Jacoby Brissett. We won. It was 2019. And then we went on to, you know, we won the Super Bowl. So it's not so bad. Okay. It's better to lose now than it is in the postseason when things really start to matter. Sean, what were some of the struggles that you saw, more specifically on the offensive side of the ball this week?
Well, one of the big things I first saw was we really didn't stick to the running game plan at all. Pat was our leading rusher, I believe. We got to start running the ball a little bit more. I know that we switched it up a little bit. They weren't in what I thought they were going to run. They were running a lot of cover four. But with having Andy Reid as the coach, Eric Bieniemy as offensive coordinator, and Pat as the quarterback, we got to figure that out. Like, that many points, 14 points in the first half and three in the second. Like, what are you doing, guys? There's just not good play calling. I don't know what's going on over there, but.
Speaking of points, we have this new trend on the Kansas City Chiefs offense where one player wants to point to where the other player is supposed to go or do something, because Pat was pointing at Clyde to run at a hole that would have been hard for him to see in that run. I think Trey Smith got blown back, and like it would have just been hard for any running back to make that cut. But Pat's pointing it over here like, hey, buddy, there's the hole. And then first drive of the game, or one of the first two drives of the game, Travis Kelce's pointing at Clyde to tell like Pat to hit him, and it would have been a first down. There was nobody in front of him. But I don't necessarily know what was going on in Pat's head there, but we for one need to quit pointing fingers and just kind of let that game go and figure it out going forward.
It's way too early in the year to start pointing fingers, too. It's game three. Like, that's not something we should be worried about. We should just let it all ride out, see how it plays out, let the offense speak for itself instead of blaming other people for not going to where they think an opportunity is. They're not actually where that person is.
I think that's an aspect that's being overlooked a little much. As you know, as a guy who obviously I played college ball, and that's not that impressive, but like, that's a thing that is done on all levels, and it should be done on all levels. You should be pointing out where the holes are or where a player should be going. You see it on broken plays where quarterbacks have to scramble and they're pointing to open spots. They're pointing people to blockers. It's not so much as like, yes, when Pat does it on the run, that's a little much. It is what it is. But when you've got players like Travis Kelce pointing at Clyde, who's over on the sideline, he's trying to say, Pat, throw it over this way. This lane's obviously closed off. So it's not pointing, when we look at this, it's not players pointing at somebody whose fault it is. They're actually trying to help direct the game flow in the middle of a play that's completely broken. I think it's being overlooked a little much.
Or you mean like blown out of proportion? Because it doesn't look good outside looking in. You add the little tiff that Pat and EB had. Like, it looks like we're a frustrated offense that's like getting too much in its own way.
It does, but like we were talking about earlier, like when you hop on Twitter after the game, everybody's fire Andy Reid, fire EB, you know, trade Orlando Brown and everyone for a number one receiver. Like, things are being blown out of a little, or far too out of proportion. Again, when you look at these things, these are just game management things. It doesn't look good to somebody hasn't necessarily been on the field in those situations or be able to see it through a player's eyes. These aren't players who are pointing out mistakes in each other. They're players trying to maneuver around the field in the middle of a game. When you're on a basketball court and you see LeBron pointing for somebody to set a pick and somebody to roll to another position, that's not LeBron pointing out somebody's mistakes. Or you can do the same thing with Kevin Durant or Russell Westbrook, whoever, Dame Lillard. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. They're pointing out where players should be moving to or going just to set something up in the middle of a play. So it's just a blown out of proportion that we're blaming players. It's not blaming. We're just seeing things in the middle of the field. And that's where you go back in at halftime or after the game, if halftime is passed, and you say, here are the things that are open. These are the things that are working. Let's draw up plays to go with that. There are a lot of plays that get made in the middle of the game. You'd be surprised. It has to deal with general formations that are already there, but you're just moving around pieces or setting players up in a different spot. It's just general game management when players start to point out holes and notice in the middle of a play.
We thank you for your insight. Yeah, Bob.
Of course. Tybo, what were some of the struggles that you came away with?
Two big things that have been well documented in the media. Anybody that studies film for the Chiefs, they've been harping on these two things specifically. The wide receivers struggled to get separation in man coverage, which is worrisome to say the least. Because if they can man up our receivers, they can rush more than four. And then we know Pat's going to be on the move and in trouble. Like, that coupled with the other struggle is our offensive line play. That's not a good mix for our offense going forward. If Pat's not going to have time to throw and our receivers are getting locked up in man, what are we going to do? Like, force feed the ball to Travis Kelce and he's going to catch 50% of those balls? Like, those are two aspects that that really need to get addressed going forward. I have faith in the coaching staff, but you know, the Colts defensive line or the Colts defense in general, like missing Shaq Leonard in the middle. I don't know. I don't view them as an elite defense. And I just And it was rough to see that we were having that type of struggle against the Colts that game.
Yeah, when you go back and you kind of start looking at the stats that have come out, I mean, offensively, offensive line-wise, it's really, really bad, man. Our win rate is poor for pass protection. It's middle of the pack. It's literally, for PFF's grade and ESPN's win rate, we're right in the middle of the pack for everyone. Now, when it comes to run blocking, per our PFF grades and ESPN win rate, it's very high. It's actually the best offensive line in the league when it comes to ESPN's win rate.
Is this running total or just last week?
This is a running total. That's where I was going to say is like this last week, it clearly shows that wasn't the case, as we only had 58 yards rushing. But I mean, there's a little upside to the offense with as bad as it was. We had 315 yards of total offensive yards. We were able to run 60 plays. We had over 5 yards per play. It was just the little mistakes that we continue to talk about. One guy getting blown up and it blows up the whole play, or guys not being able to get open. One of the things that, Andy said, which really did irk me, was that the team didn't prepare well, and it obviously starts with him. If you're Andy, we all know your record. It's not like you didn't prepare well. You just prepared incorrectly. One of the things, Tybo, that you said last week, I believe, is about Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator, correct? That's his name?
Yeah.
Or it wasn't you, it was Sean, I'm sorry. Sean, you had said Gus Bradley, running cover three, and the stats show 73% of the time this year, when the Colts are on defense, they're running a cover three. They threw cover four at us all day long. Pat knows how to beat cover four, but the team wasn't prepared. So it wasn't that they weren't prepared. It's that they were prepared incorrectly. They were looking for a different defense, and expect that to change for the rest of the season. They were caught off guard. They didn't adapt well, and things just went the wrong way. And one of the reasons that started off the entire game is, dude, if Sky Moore doesn't muff that punt, the very first punt of the game, and give them the ball back inside the three, this entire game is totally different. There's no momentum swing. Lucas Oil Stadium doesn't get rocking. Things like, and then there's just the full system collapse that goes along with it. The fourth down fake. Why are we taking the future Hall of Famer and best quarterback in the league off the field on a fourth down and let Tommy Townsend go for it? I think it was a mental mistake across all fronts, offense and special teams. Do you guys think that offense still performs the same if the special teams doesn't mess a few of those things up at the beginning?
Well, not even to say they perform the same. Like, you take that type of mistake out of the game, and like the way the whole team played, the way the offense played would have been good enough to win that game.
Yeah.
And you can say that about, Sky Moore's muff punt or Chris Jones's penalty at the end. Like, the team played well enough to win that game. Mistakes in crucial moments like that are what cost us that game. Like, all the mistakes that happened through the game, the team played well enough to win.
And we would have won, too. I mean, also, you got to talk about special teams. Missed point after touchdown. Missed field goal. Like, that all comes back to bite us.
Luckily, Matt Amendola did get cut. So, I don't know if that means we bring in another kicker. I don't know if that means Justin Reed.
Veach is working over on it. Brett's working on it.
We have nothing. We don't know if Justin Reed's going to take over the duties. If Harrison Butker's coming back. I mean,
everybody wants Reed to do it.
Why not?
Everybody wants Reed to take over.
It can't be.
I would assume that Butker has to be coming back soon, right? I mean, the IR is a minimum of a 4-week designation. Well, I don't think that changes. You know, he's got to be back by next week at the latest, right?
We can hope. We can cross our fingers, but like, there's nothing that's really stopping them. Like, if it's still like nagging him, there's nothing that's stopping them from keeping me out longer. Am I right?
The only reason why there wouldn't be anything stopping him is because they did not designate him to the IR. That'd be the only reason. If he's going to be out for a minimum of 4 weeks, why not put him on the IR and save the roster spot? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you're looking at the general management side anyways, and roster designation spots. There were a lot of miscues. We already covered Sky Moore. Another one was the kickoff returns. Both returners performed terribly, absolutely terribly. Not just Sky, but also Pacheco on kick return. Moving forward into Tampa Bay and on even later, do you think that if mistakes like these get made early on in a game, will these rookies be pulled more quickly and given spots to the veterans? Will we see Corey Coleman activated off the practice squad relatively soon? What are your guys' thoughts on how Dave Tube or how you personally should or would handle these special team issues?
I mean, Dave, too, being the special teams genius that he is, I'm going to trust his judgment on whatever he does with it. But I would still probably give them at least the first half to try to figure it out. Maybe they make a play, figure it out, go bust one off or something. But I wouldn't give it to the veterans until the second half at least. You know, McCole can go back there at any moment. They're fine with him going back there. Who knows? I just trust the rookies going forward a little bit more. They had a rough week. They're going to get used to it. It's the NFL now.
And it's funny you mentioned McCole, because that's another funny thing about this week. Like, you know, that's another thing that leads me to say that McCole still has something lingering that's like inhibiting him. Like D-Rob has been pulled fairly quickly in certain games in the past for making mistakes on special teams. McCole has been pulled for making mistakes on special teams. So the fact that they didn't turn to him after the first muffed punt tells me that he's still dealing with some pain.
He got rolled up on him pretty early on in the game too. And ran did out. He came back in, but it didn't look too good.
And, you know, that was just another curious thing about the offensive struggles. Like, McCole was out there, but he wasn't being used. There was other people on the team that didn't get snaps that I feel like, you know, Chiefs fans are ready to see them get more of a shot. But like you said, Sean, I trust Tube. They definitely have work to do. But, you know, I think Ty Bob bringing up, you know, Pacheco's miscues on kickoff return, I think is getting a little overlooked
most definitely.
I think a majority of the kicks that he pulled out of the end zone would have been just fine to just let it grow out the back. So they have work. I hope they get stuff cleaned up, and I do trust them that they will.
Before we move on to the defensive side, I did end up being able to pull the snap counts from the Colts game and found a few things interesting. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, through 3 weeks, this has been a trend, has been our receiver with the most snaps. And that trend continued in week 3 against the Colts. McColl has had a steady pace of about anywhere from 40 to 45 snaps. So easily wide receiver number 3. Jerick McKinnon, I believe for 2 weeks in a row now, if not 3, I believe 2 is correct. Jerick McKinnon has had the most snaps out of any running backs on the roster. Even beating out Clyde by a fairly good margin, 33 to 25. Noah Gray snap count has been going up each and every single week. This week he got 26 or 41% of the snaps, which is interesting. They're getting him more and more involved. His blocking skills, I feel, obviously everybody was very poor this week, but over the last 2 weeks against the Cardinals and the Chargers was fairly decent enough to hit for him to be out on the field that often.
Noah's one of those guys that can't get separation. I want to see more Jody.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And that goes back to Jody, only 8 snaps. He's been held under 10 snaps. He's been held in the single digits all 3 weeks. And he's not really utilized in the goal line or red zone packages, which is not what we want to see. I don't think most fans want to see that. But most specifically us, we're all on the Jody Fortson hype train and want to see him out there more often. And then Sky Moore coming in as well at 8 snaps. Just thought that was interesting. He has been trending up each week a little bit more on getting snap counts. I'm wondering when we will see him get out there a little bit more. I think it'll take an injury, but he is definitely the man who will be covering or taking over Mecole Hardman's spot if Mecole is ever to leave a game.
I think that'll be good for Mecole too. It'll put some pressure on him. Hopefully that'll make him perform a little bit better because he's in one of the later years in his contract, is he not?
He's in year 4. He was not a first-round pick, and so this is contract year. And
contract year, man.
We've been talking about it. Contract years are pretty good for players. So far, it's looking like the contract year is going to be defeated for a second year in a row. Last year, obviously, Honey Badger, Dan Sorensen, and the like. It looks like it may be defeated again, which is sad to say. Defensively, real quick, I'll run through before we jump in on there. Colin Sanders getting 21 snaps, 30% of the share. He had a stat line. Kid looked fantastic. He needs to be on the field much more often. Four players.
He was making athletic plays, too. He was moving.
He's looking good.
He's an athletic person. He doesn't look – his build doesn't look athletic. Yeah,
he's fast for his size.
He can do backflips.
Yeah.
Like, he needs to be on the field a little bit more. And I've seen him drop into coverage play that fairly well. There were four players, should have been five, that got 100% of the snaps. Nick Bolton, Justin Reed, Legarius Sneed, and Juan Thornhill all played 71 snaps. Rashad Fenton only missed 1 snap on the defensive side of the ball. Darius,
I like
Harris.
Darren Watson better.
Yeah.
Darius Harris, 62 snaps, 87% of the share. Little note in there just because, like, everybody was on the Leo Chanel hype train and he only had 11 snaps. That doesn't look good, especially against a team that is obviously a mainly rushing team. Jalen Watson also 59 snaps, 83% of the share. Karlaftis, go ahead.
Darius Harris showed why he should be in there, though.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. He was everywhere, flying around the ball. George Karlaftis with 80% of the snap share. Frank Clark was 72. Turk
Wharton
played
well.
54. Yeah. And surprisingly, Carlos Dunlap, almost 45% of the snaps at 31 snaps.
I almost want to see more of him.
Yeah, he looked good.
Yes.
I would agree. Although Frank played well, man. Like, I think that's pretty much it that I'm going to cover for the snap count. Brian Cook with 9 snaps. Interesting to see that he's not getting in as much as we thought he would. It looks like we're not running nickel as much as we have in the past. I would like to see less Frank. I think a lot of people would, and he played well. He got himself a sack. His contained
but he had more pressures too.
Yeah.
He did. His contain abilities are really good, and I think that's one of the reasons why he stays on the field as much as he does. But I don't know, man. I think pressure's got to do it for this year if we're not going to blitz as much as we have been. What do you guys think? We have been running a lot of blitzes and odd blitzes with corners and safeties coming off the edges. We haven't seen that very often. What's your takeaway from that?
It's working. Nick Bolton. I mean, we have offensive lines confused. Nick Bolton came scot-free on a couple of plays. Realistically, the defense gave up two field goals and one legitimate touchdown. The other touchdown, I can't really blame them because they got it at the 2-yard line. What we're doing on defense, the way we've replaced collectively Willie Gay, the stuff that we've been doing on defense has been working. The blitz scheme, I'm loving it. Legarius Sneed has 2 sacks this year. The more people that get involved, the more that defenses don't know where it's coming from, the more we're going to see success like that. And real quick about Frank Clark, I was saying in the preseason, I feel like we're going to get the most out of him when we give him a good rotation. And that doesn't mean he gets, 80 to 100% of the snaps. We're looking at like the 50-60 range, which I guess he was there. Just objectively in the past, he's known to take plays off. And if we limit that, we're going to get his 100% more often. And we have the rotational pieces to keep it spread out. And I don't feel like there's a drop off when we come Frank Clark to Carlos Dunlap. Karloftis is coming along, but we have the pieces to keep everybody fresh. And that's the way we're going to see the most out of Frank Clark.
Yeah, and the one big thing about our defense was throughout that whole entire game, minus the first touchdown they gave up and minus the Chris Jones penalty where they got a free first down at, the 40, they only gave up 2 field goals, and they barely got across midfield for that. So they're stopping at least the Colts for a good part, which they looked decent at times yesterday with everybody there, but they're showing up. Jalen Watson is looking really good. They're getting a lot of pressure. They got 2 fumbles yesterday too, or Sunday.
Yeah. Jalen Watson, I believe, was the among 53 corners with at least 100 snaps. He is ranked 8th out of all those corners with a 56.3 in passer rating allowed.
7th rounder, man.
Now just wait till McDuffie comes back.
Yeah.
Like the defense. The defense is the bright spot, and I think I said this in the group. Like, if you would have asked me what the bright spot of the Chiefs would be, I was like, well, like Mahomes in the offense. Like, who would have thought that the defense would be our bright spot at this point in the season in the way they're playing? Don't even.
saying it all offseason.
You said if we were lucky, if they keep playing the way they were playing the Arizona game, we'd have a top 5 D-line.
D-line. Linebackers and DBs, man. That's where our bread and butter is nowadays. I agree, though. Like, it is – I didn't think it would be as bright of a spot. As you said, like, everybody's going to go, oh, it's Patrick Mahomes, it's these receivers, blah, blah, blah. Defense is surprising, as good as they are. Now, granted, the offense that they went against is piss poor, but through 3 games, man, they have been the – brightest spot of all.
Are you saying that the Colts offense is piss poor?
Yes.
Jonathan Taylor didn't have a rush over 10 yards.
That doesn't mean he's piss poor. We did well containing him.
Yeah.
Him specifically is not the piss poor player. I'm saying as a unit, that offense is piss poor. You have an awful aging quarterback. You've seen it for the last 10 years. In Atlanta,
he's adjusting to a new system, and they have some fun weapons in Indianapolis. Don't sit here and say they're dog shit. Like,
they'll get there.
That's a good. There's a reason they beat us. That's a good team.
I think it's a trap game, but
that's it. It really shouldn't have been a trap game. It shouldn't have been.
No,
and it happens. Those things happen.
We played awful, and we were still put in the position to win.
And that's the good thing about it.
I'm gonna go ahead and sound off like right now. Like oh. It's, I'm not gonna sit here and say that I'm personally blaming one player for this loss. But Chris Jones owned up to his mistake after the game. He's a veteran player. It was a it was a terrible, it was a weak call. The officials are getting too high and mighty, you know, having a power trip, wanting to control the outcome of the game. That's a penalty flag that should not have been thrown. All that aside, that's a veteran player that cannot make that penalty at that point in the game. Do not give them any reason to throw a flag on you, whether they should have or they shouldn't. Don't give them any reason to walk off the field, win the game, hand the ball over to Pat Mahomes and say, run out this clock. Because even with all the mistakes, that all the miscues, all the bad play calling, we put ourselves in the position to win that game. We didn't put ourselves in a great position. Andy Reid's fallen on the sword after the game in the press conference saying, I didn't put the guys in the position to win the game. We were in the position to win the game. And a huge mistake that is, you know, everybody's looking at it. Everybody is calling them out, whatever. That's just something that can't happen. Games in the NFL are too hard to win. It just makes it that much harder later on in the season. That can't happen.
So, NFL, let's have some consistency. The quarterbacks are going to be able to chirp. Let everybody else chirp, man. As long as you're not, like, being racist or threatening somebody or whatever, like, let the dudes have a little fun. You're going to let Philip Rivers run around and scream in people's ear holes and Tom Brady. Jaw jacking back and forth with not only Honey Badger, but Chris Jones as well. Patrick Mahomes has done it. Everybody does it. Everybody, let's be a little less sensitive when we're on a field with a bunch of alpha males.
If they're going to call that penalty, real slippery slope. Cause like, what, you know, what are you going to do next? You're going to mic everybody up, have somebody, an official, listening to people like trash talking, like, oh, he said something too offensive, you should throw a flag. Like,
well, they kind of have done that. I mean, go back to the Myles Garrett situation against Mason Rudolph, and they went back and got the audio as best they could. I mean, they've got the ability to do that, but who wants to do that, man? Like, let these guys have a little bit of fun. This is an alpha male game. These guys are out there putting their bodies on the line. Let them enjoy a little trash talk. You can do it on the basketball court. You saw Russ do it in the bubble when he's talking trash to like 4-year-olds on the sideline. All right. These are grown men. Let them talk trash to each other. They'll be all right. All right, Sean, hit me and the people with a little bit of upside before we get out of here. What are some of the good things that could be taken away from this game and applied into the coming weeks?
Well, the biggest thing I can see right here, best news you're going to hear all day for it, Pat Mahomes is still undefeated in domes. Remember that. The roof and window were open. That does not count as a dome game.
Let's go. Let's go.
Remember that. So, look for Patrick Mahomes to continue that streak in his next dome game, whenever that may be. It wasn't this past weekend, but hey, it's okay.
There is actually a chance we play in a dome.
For the Super Bowl?
No. This week.
Yeah.
Because the Hurricane, New Orleans is one of the locations, and is the
Minnesota.
Is Minnesota Stadium, is that a dome too?
It's yes, it is a dome.
Okay, so we have a chance of playing in a dome this week.
We will play in a dome 100% chance this week. There's no way that we play in Tampa come Sunday.
No.
I mean, I don't think so either. Who knows what's going to happen with it. I was hoping they would bring it back to Kansas City.
They should. But it makes sense that they don't.
Yeah.
Tybo, upside, what do you got?
I mean, we talked about both things already on the show. The defense looks good. The defense is playing well. We are playing without Trent McDuffie and Willie Gay currently. When they come back, this defense is going to be even better. They, on that side of the ball, look like they're primed for a deep playoff run. We just need to get the offense there. And even with all the play calling issues, the decision making issues on the field, and just the overall execution, the offense still put up numbers. So if we play like this in a bad game, you know, Patrick Mahomes down year when he throws 4,800 yards, you know, when we have a bad game and we still put up those kind of numbers and still, you know, essentially were, even after the penalty and the Colts touchdown at the end of the game, we were almost in a position to keep that game going.
Yeah.
Pat had 24 seconds on the clock. And, you know, he's a tipped ball away from, you know, getting us into field goal range. So, you know, even when we struggle, these Kansas City Chiefs are in positions to win games week in and week out.
Yeah, I'm 100% on both of those. Don't forget, we have one of the best and greatest head coaches of all time. He knows how to prepare. He knows how to make adaptations on the fly with time to go. We covered it in preseason. There is not one team on our schedule that will ever this season have a leg up on us in the regular season. Nobody plays us coming off of a bye week. We have the same amount of time or more when we play every single game. Andy Reid's going to have the boys prepared. The offensive line can't get worse. It can't. This is not Cincinnati, all right? We're not the Bungles, all right? If Patrick Mahomes even gets close to being touched as many times in one game as Joe Burrow, Veach is firing everyone. We are going with 10 linemen on the field at all times. All right. So
No. 9 linemen and Travis Kelce.
No, that's true.
Travis got to run a route. Like.
That's true. You're not wrong. Adaptations will be made. Offensive line will get better. Receivers had a good showing in week one. They've had two lazy showings in through week two and week three. This is rock bottom, I believe.
Juju had about 5 or 6 catches for 80-something yards.
He's looking fantastic in this offense. Yeah. We've just got to get...
And if this is our rock bottom, we're fine.
Relax.
R-E-L-A-X, Chiefs Kingdom. Relax. It's going to be okay. As we wrap this one up, thoughts and prayers to everyone down affected by Hurricane Ian, Cuba, everyone in Florida. It's a state of emergency. Be safe. You're probably not listening to this because you're going somewhere safe. So just make sure to hunker down, get out, be safe. We'll hit you on Thursday night, Friday all day with news of the upcoming game. We'll have news by then for sure of where it's going to be played. And as always, go Chiefs.
Go Chiefs.